Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Time to hit some college football headlines, discussion, SEC discussion with Doug Matthews as we go on the road with him, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, how many years have you been on the station?
Since the first weekend it was on, what is that, 16 years? I don't know, 15? Yeah,
probably 16? Longer than that now.
I'm really bad about it. I have not kept dates of whenever.
I know the anniversary is coming up next month for you.
Yeah, that the first or second weekend when they went, that Steve Dickert was the station manager, yeah. And I was over at just actually doing a Sunday show, Big Orange Sunday, and they wanted me to look at moving my show over here, and I did it under the I'd probably done it anyway, but kind of worked out a deal to do the Saturday show, and that's grown really into something. You know, kind of interesting at that time, as you all will recall, or maybe you won't recall, but they only had drive time evening sports talk in Nashville. That was it. And the
right.
thought was, and this was told to me, I mean, and this is what all the consultants were telling them, a Saturday morning talk show would not work, and B, neither would a morning drive time show. My question to them was this. I said, who listens to the show going from 4 to 6 or 3 to 6 or 4 to 7? They said, well, people driving home. And I said, well, how do people get to work? If they're driving home, they're driving in. Why would a morning sports talk show not work? And, of course, now what do we got, 13 local yes. hours on yes. this station by itself?
Wall to wall.
So
now people are listening at work, in the car, on a sales call, whatever it might be in the middle of the day.
Well, as you all know, there's really so many topics you could talk about that people are interested in. Obviously, almost every day, I'm a big believer if you talk Titans and NFL and Tennessee and Vanderbilt and SEC, you can do a talk show just around that. But add in all the other sports. As we know, there's an excellent following of Preds fans and NHL fans. We have baseball fans, and it's turned into, as we know, a really, really good organization, good company.
And I'm not saying anything you don't already know, but your shows on the weekend are booming right now. I'm not sure if they've ever been more popular, and they've been popular in the past. But the people I hear and the podcast downloads that we see from Big Orange Sunday, Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. right here on The Zone, Forklift System Sports, Saturday 9 to 11, it's on a great pace right now. How did you transition from coaching to media? Like, with deciding to host a show, what got you into it?
Well, when I came back to Nashville, and of course, one year at Vanderbilt, and then I bought a sporting goods company. And at that time, Bill King, Bob Bell were doing an evening drive time show on LAC. They invited me to come over for a couple of days a week during football season, and then it kind of grew from that. The Sunday show, there's company called a magazine called Big Orange Illustrated that many might remember. They hired Bob and I, paid us $50 an hour to do 13 or 12 shows, I guess, that first year. And Bob and I kind of saw an opportunity to maybe expand it a little bit,
yeah.
and started out with 13 shows of our own called Big Orange Sunday, which, by the way, I mentioned this on a couple of Sunday shows ago. You know, the term Big Orange is protected by the University of Tennessee. So when I started Big Orange Sunday, I had to have supposed to be a written waiver, but I didn't get that. Didn't ask for it. Didn't know I should. But Doug Dickey, who's the athletic director at the time, allowed me to use that name. But at any time, they could come back in and say, "Hey, Doug, we want that back." I don't think this current athletic director will. But you know, I had a backup. I was going to call it Big Orange Sunday.
Take out the work. A, and just
yeah,
orange.
Big Orange. So that isn't verbally.
Kind of like you've got brain.
That's right.
Doug Matthews with us.
So I was curious. We were talking about your sponsorship deals off the air when we were coming in here, and I was saying I need lessons from you, and I said to these guys, "How did he get so good at this right before you walked in, and they both looked at me like I was an idiot and said, recruiting. So I want to know how recruiting naturally took you into being able to sell your show.
Well, one of the things that happened, just I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version. When I started the show over at LAC, I would buy the time from LAC, and then I'd go out and resell it. So when it came over here back, what, 13 years ago, whenever it was, that was a deal I worked out. And then the Saturday show, we kind of worked out a deal on that where I would sell it, keep a percentage of it, pay the station a percentage. That's kind of worked in now where I just buy 4 hours on every weekend, pay the Cumulus for that, and then I have total control over sponsorship, which I go out and resell. And also content. That was big for me, and who's on the show, and it's a good working relationship. And the best thing I can tell people who listen to the shows and also my sponsors, I'm not employed by this station, so when I say something nice about this station,
go ahead.
It's not because I'm employed by it.
Your thoughts on the Midday 180, please.
He's telling us about being
here. As a non-station employee.
Well, that's exactly right. And the other part of it is, as you all know, I've made a conscious effort, and it's really worked out over there. You know, sometimes you make decisions to do things. I made a dumb decision to buy a radio station in Knoxville that I couldn't get rid of for 15 years. But I made the decision I'm not going to be on Twitter. I'm not going to be on any social media. I'm not going to do anything with any websites, reading anything like that. Don't look at those. Don't particularly care to hear from really people about the show. Don't take phone calls, and just try to use the experience that I had in coaching and learning and things like that. And, you know, things come easy to some people. And, I've been following football ever since I was old enough to walk or talk or whatever. I remember my first high school game I ever went to was Pitcher, Oklahoma, Gorillas playing the Ridge Runners of Grove, Oklahoma. I was 7 years old, sitting in the stands, freezing my rear end off with my dad. And, you know, at that time, I was going to be the head coach at Pitcher High. I was going to be an all-state football player. I was going to go to Oklahoma, win the Heisman Trophy, and then eventually coach at Oklahoma. So there's only one of those left, too. Pitcher High is not a school anymore. The town disintegrated.
Once you were gone, what's the point?
No reason for it to continue.
But I still have a shot at being the head coach at Oklahoma. Heisman Trophy's gone. Can't do that. But I still have a shot at being the head coach at Oklahoma. It's a slim one. But I still have an opportunity there.
But when you walk in to cold call somebody, because you've got an open advertising slot on Big Orange Sunday, how much is that like recruiting, and give us a little bit about how you go about that?
Paul, what I do is, it's a lot like recruiting. I go in when the first thing I do, first off, I know pretty much what my audience is. You know, I'm not going to sell sneakers. I'm on once a weekend. I can't do some of the spots that you all do. I can't do because I'm not on 5 days a week. So it's people like Delta Dental. It's people like, you know, who just want their name out there. They don't want you to come walking in their store. They don't have, you know, but keep the name out there, things like that. I've had people advertise with me that just wants their name associated with sports, and in some instances wants it associated with the University of Tennessee.
Now, here's the real reason we're on this conversation. What started it all is Chad, earlier this morning, noticed your pants. Yeah. That's what
this
led
is
to
where
all
this. This whole conversation started with that.
I've got a pair of pants on, and I've got
a great pair of pants.
My shirt, my shoes, my socks, my pants, nothing else. The rest of it's not from there. It's all from McPherson's Menswear.
Yep. And I didn't see them. You were in the Titan studio, and I didn't see.
Check out. Do you see Doug's pants? And I said, Doug is in a room over there where the window starts.
You made the rounds earlier this morning, but I didn't notice. Chad did.
Yeah.
So when he came in, I'm like, are those from McPherson? So he looked at me like, of course they are.
They'd look great with Chad's salmon shirt.
They would look good out there. Paul Barler, I have an arrangement with Paul Barler, who, matter of fact, does several pants for NFL teams. Used to do like 8 or 10 of them for their coaching staff. I don't know if he still does.
Oh, like game day wear?
Yeah,
game day wear. Hey, Paul. How you doing,
anyway,
buddy?
I can see it all now. You know how you, what did I say? I was watching one of the local sports shows news shows last night, and, you know, so-and-so's wardrobe
Demetrius used to always be furnished by the French shop. Will Hogue had a great tweet about
that. Now, y'all's problem
condolences to the French shop.
What's our problem?
Your problem is that there's no TV. Paul could probably do it on his podcast or his video cast, whatever that one's called. But they have to be able to see it. You can't tell them I'm wearing it.
Hutton could probably pull that off.
But anyway,
I'll have it tomorrow.
But the good thing is, you know what's interesting is, and you all find this in a different way, because the shows have been on so long, you know, it's really pretty easy to walk in. Number one, if they take my call to come see them, and I have several that call me wanting to know about being on, and I quickly tell them that's not going to work on my show. For instance, real estate people, things like that, you know, that's not my show. But insurance, I'm getting ready to star physical therapy is coming on, Kelly Ziegler's group, and that's because of my show, as you all know, skews a little older, and I can tell you from experience in being there, as you get a little older, you need a little different type of physical therapy than you got when you were when you were dancing when you were 18 or 19.
You need to advertise for the bridge club that you play in.
Well, that probably would be a possibility, but they don't spend much money.
How competitive is that?
Closed membership also, Hutton.
How competitive?
It's very exclusive.
Tremendously competitive.
How much money changed?
He was in a national tournament?
It was a Nashville
qualifier
tournament I'm not nearly good enough to do that. But you know, some of the very best, some of the world's best bridge players live here. Mike Lawrence, who was a what they call the Dallas Aces, this goes way back in the 60s, lives here now. And he teaches from here, and he writes, and there's some tremendous bridge players in this area. Vanderbilt Bridge, and there's clubs all over the place. I play at Vanderbilt, I play at Brentwood, play at Franklin. But Vanderbilt Bridge, I think, is in the top 10 in the whole country for a number of tables that you play at, not tables, but people at the tables, in the country for top 10 of all the clubs in the country. So this is a big bridge area.
How long will you play when you go and sit at one of
these tables? You usually play, you know, it's called duplicate. So what happens is everybody, you have pairs and you play against the other pairs, and it's how you bid, you all play the same hands. And it's how well you play them versus how well your opponents play them. And it takes about probably 3 hours. There's usually about 26 what they call boards. And you bid back and forth. You communicate back and forth by using, you know, verbally, not signals or anything. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in some of the bridge terms, they got it where you can't even see your partner. But it's a lot of fun. And what I like about it is I am average. I would be an average duplicate bridge player. What I like about it is it really keeps you thinking, you know, numbers. I'm not a big on numbers, but you got to know how many cards have been played and card sense, and also how to communicate with your partner. And it's good
exercise for your brain.
Yeah.
Our three production assistants are now assigned to bid to us in one paragraph why they should be the one to go out and cover Doug's bridge game.
Absolutely.
Have a huge fun doing a condensed, you know, what, 6-minute bit covering this 3-hour bridge game.
Emma, are you hearing this back there?
Vanderbilt.
I want to do it.
We're being serious.
I want to do it. Any of the three of us going out and doing it would be hysterical. I'm offering it up to these three young people as the content of a lifetime to put on their reel. Going back to school,
I legit want to learn about it too. I want to see this piece, the produced piece about.
Yes.
But the moment
Doug
I offered
bridge,
it up,
I'm curious about the
moment
game.
I offered it up. I'm like, damn, this would be as good as Chad talking to Ryan Mudd on the street or me talking to Paul Edwards about Herb. I really want to do it.
Vanderbilt Bridge has their own location. Most places play in churches or things like
bingo halls.
Vanderbilt Bridge, though, off White Bridge Road, has their own building out there. It's a huge, huge organization and greatly run. Really,
can they come? Can somebody come?
Sure.
Yes or no?
Yeah. I would.
Read your thoughts.
Speaking for Emma, she said first hard pass, and secondly, what is bridge?
That's a lack of ambition. There, she's out. Phil, you're up against.
Ruin this. What I don't want to ruin in my mind is the imagery of Doug Matthews just ripping into someone the way he went on the sideline.
No. It's very.
Oh, don't ruin it for me.
No. It's listen. You got to be you got to be a gentleman there. You really do.
I can't wait to see this piece.
Now, my partner rips me every now and then. By the way, I'm not going to say who my partner is. I play with all the time, but he also.
Do we need to black out his face on the video?
No, he also was an advertiser. He also was a sponsor on my show. Oh. I killed two birds with one.
We'll cover him up like Eklund.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. I hope our listeners enjoyed that last segment the way we did. Doug, as we hit some of the headlines, let's start here with transfer and waivers. It's something you and I discussed a couple of weeks ago on Sports Saturday. But you have a pretty simple solution, and it's actually just going back to what was in place prior to all of this discussion.
Listen, they being the NCAA, but I'm not blaming the NCAA. It's all this. It's been going on, talk about what to do in this situation. I think they're kind of conflating two different areas, you know, coaches being able to leave, players being able to leave. But quite frankly, for years and years and years, the rule was simply this. You sign a contract with a university or a school, college. You don't sign it with a coach. And it very plainly says on that national letter that you are signing with school X. So, the rule was, and the way it was handled, the way it's administered was, if you leave, you set out a calendar year, period. No ifs, ands, or buts for whatever reason. That was fine. Well, they kind of started then saying, well, what if old Joe's grandmother is in real bad shape and he needs to be there? They came up with all these reasons to it, and some of them are probably pretty good reasons. So what now has happened is it's just really gone off the rails, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think very simply what they should do, just go back to the old rule. Listen, if you sign with the school and you leave, you must sit out a calendar year. Now, I would put one caveat in there. If you are dismissed from the team or if you're taken off scholarship, then you can go anywhere you want to. I would keep the portal. You don't have to get approval to leave. You don't have to get approval to go to another school and be on scholarship. But you do have to set out a calendar year, and I think that would solve most problems. Because here's what's happened. Lawyers get involved in it. They can come up with almost any reason now, and it sounds, you know, okay. Well, that's the reason to do it. So instead of having the committees that are changing all the time looking at, that's the rule. That's the way it was for years and years and years. And I think we ought to go back to it. It'd be hard to do, but that's the only way they're going to get out of this mess.
Do you buy that there's been favoritism in some cases? For instance, there's a Maryland transfer trying to go to Kent State that can't get into school there based on this waiver. He can't get it approved. But meanwhile, some of the blue blood programs tend to have those transfers pass through pretty quickly.
John, I don't think it's favoritism. Okay. I just think that it's when you have a committee that it's subjective. You know, and when you listen to a story, if someone can present their story better than maybe someone else can, and that's why when you get the legal part of it involved in that. But, you know, they make cases like, you know, just like the Fields, Justin Fields that went from Georgia to Ohio State. Well, the reason for that was, and I don't know all the ins and outs, but there was some type of racial situation between a baseball player or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, but you know, there's lots of things said in ball games from fans, and you know, where does that stop? Again, that might have been a justified reason, but there's no question that when Martell left Ohio State, and he left Ohio State for one reason, because Justin Fields came in, there's no really justification for him to go to the University of Miami and be being eligible immediately. So that the NCAA saw that. Now they're trying to claw it back. Well, we know how hard that is. So I think most programs, when they take an undergrad transfer, they are expecting him to set out a year. I think we should go back to that. Now, I know that's old school and all that, but I think that's the best way to handle it.
I think that we're seeing more of the blue bloods be able to get this quickly because they have much larger compliance staffs.
I think it goes even simpler than that, Hutton. Here's the common denominator with those two guys. They came armed with an attorney. An attorney sent provided by themselves, but probably through a school. I think if you come to bat threatening a lawsuit and you have the right attorney who sends in the request, they got their response answered quickly. Meanwhile, Tennessee's still waiting on Aubrey Solomon and D'Angelo Gibbs. And it's going to come down to, and Doug, you've talked about this, what does the NCAA not want? Legal problems.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ultimately it, is they don't want to be sued. They don't want to have problems with the government either.
Started with Shea Patterson and that the other four players out of Ole Miss who basically said that they were misled by Coach Freeze on the program going on probation and those types of things, which was probably true. But, you know, what if I'm a young man being recruited and they tell me, I want you to come here because we're going to build a program that's going to compete for a conference championship. And then I get there and we don't compete for a conference championship. Can I leave because the coach didn't tell me the truth? Anyway, that's what my suggestion would be, but it won't go any further than this show. It's cut and dried. That's the way it was for years. We knew that if we took a player from another school, a transfer from another school, that he was not going to be eligible. Now, they changed. The only thing was if you went from a Division I program to a Division II or lower program, you were eligible immediately. It was just you couldn't go, you know, sideways, or you couldn't move up and do it. But that would be my suggestion. And I've looked at that. I've spent a lot of time looking at it and listening, and all of it sounds good, but it just does not work out.
Doug, in the time of year where we're seeing the NBA dominate the headlines, where the players run that league, in some cases in the NFL, the quarterbacks run those teams. You could say the same for Major League Baseball with some of the contracts that these guys have. I'm not seeing it in college football. The coaches still run everything going on there. Why don't we see more of these high-profile players step in and run things?
Well,
specifically with college football, because in college basketball, we do see that.
Well, you have, obviously, they're two different sports. It's just state football, pro football, and college football, two completely different sports. But I do think that if you look at the successful programs, who do you think runs the New England Patriots? Not any player. Tom Brady doesn't.
That's right.
Nobody else does. No. Now, some of these guys are strong enough. All this kind of caught my attention when Aaron Rodgers and what's the new head coach's name up there?
LaFleur.
You know, how can you coach? How can you run, be the head football coach or head coach of any sport if you can't tell, in this instance, your quarterback, hey, you're not going to call plays. That's my job. Your job is to execute them. And I think once you kind of start getting away from that, you open yourself up to a lot of scrutiny. Again, Belichick's completely different because he obviously has established himself. But I don't know how they do it. College didn't like that at all. At least the successful ones. I mean, this is the way we do things. I'm the head coach. But you know, and the other thing about pro ball is in many instances, the defensive coordinator or the offensive coordinator, they have separate contact tracks with the owner, and they really don't answer to the head coach at all. And that's Jimmy Schwartz at Philadelphia. He's a coordinator. His contract is with the owner, not the head coach. Can't tell him how to handle that, what to call, and how to handle that defense. Now, most coaches try to work with the head coach, but it's a system I don't think I could work under, quite honestly.
Isn't the players either threatening to transfer or deciding to transfer now? Is that the player's response to try to take some power back?
Well, not really, because as I've said before, look at who transfers. Who's transferring? Do you think that
quarterbacks who aren't playing?
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, Georgia, they got to, you know, they weren't going to replace their starting quarterback. So the ones that are leaving, and even the undergrad transfers and even the grad transfers, they're not leaving programs if they're starting. You know, if you're a starter, you're not going to be leaving a program. You don't leave to go play for a championship somewhere. You leave because you want to play. And again, I think that's fine, but if you're an undergrad, you need to sit out that year. So the coaches aren't worried about this at all. That's something that is not even on their radar screen, because again, good players that are playing for you and are contributors are not going to leave.
We've talked a lot about Tennessee's offense and everyone they have returning. We've talked a lot about the defensive line and how that's a big question mark. When you look at linebacker and secondary for Tennessee, and if you're looking for upperclassmen leadership, Daniel Batuli, Nigel Warrior, at both levels of that defense. Do you feel like they're guys that will take that leadership with this team this year and are capable of doing so?
I think Batuli is. I'm not sure about Warrior, quite honestly. But I think Batuli is. Batuli has accepted that. Maybe Warrior will, as is often the case when a player gets to be a senior. A lot of times they become those types of leaders that you want. Nigel Warrior has not been that type of leader his first 3 years, let me put it like that. So I don't know if he can or not, but truly he's going to have to probably.
Do you get the sense he understands the defense?
Yeah, I don't think it's that. You know, some people just – they just aren't – don't want to lead, not as good or bad, you know. But I think probably there's a couple of those sophomores. I would say Bryce Thompson and probably Elante Taylor are leaders on this team. And maybe others I'm not aware of. I think Ignat is a leader on that defense. You don't hear about him a lot because he didn't play much. I think probably Daryl Taylor is that type of player. We know they had a few of those last year, but now offensively they don't have that problem. But defensively, it's going to be a relatively inexperienced team they're going to put out there. Offensively, it's going to be a tremendously experienced team. Now, you know, you can that old argument about. Didn't play very well last year. We got them all back. They probably won't play very well this year either. But no, I think, Warrior. I know this. Warrior has not been the type of leader that they would like for him to be the first 3 years. Maybe that'll change. Hopefully, it does.
Well, the three guys they're taking to Hoover are Garantano on offense, and then Batuli and Daryl Taylor are the two defensive guys. So going
That's
along the lines,
what
you're saying,
right?
Yeah, I mean, and those
taking three.
Yeah, I mean, you could make the argument for some other offensive guys, I think, on that list. But if you're looking for players that you want to be leaders, and Batuli, to me, I mean, he's got every physical trait you would want in a linebacker. It's just sort of putting it all together and putting it all together in the right system for him. And I'm just wondering if all that kind of lines up for him this year with this system and this defense.
I think so. Again, this is not going to be a talented up front defense. You know, one other thing on just something to consider, though, going to Hoover.
Sure.
First off, for about 3 or 4 days before they go, they're with that sports information director. They are flat out told what they can talk about and what they can't talk about. It's not like they just put these guys on the plane and you're not going to answer this question. And essentially what they tell them is, and one of the things they do, they really work with them, they work with them when they get there, is how to speak. You know, you're representing the University of Tennessee now, you know, how to speak, how remember that you're not representing yourself. You're representing whichever school you're coming from. Most of them take quarterbacks because most of them have worked with the press. If they're a good enough player.
Familiar.
Yeah. Jared Garantano has been through how many press conferences, but you also notice, I think there's some better players at Tennessee that aren't going and probably to other schools too, that aren't going. And it's because they're not exactly sure what they're going to say. And that one thing that this coach at Tennessee does, those players will talk about the subject he wants them to talk about. You can bet your bottom dollar on that.
And we'll all fall asleep. So I was listening this morning to Mike Vrabel's conversation with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton on Bussin' with the Boys, their podcast. And he was talking about what he calls de-recruiting. Which so he was saying he would be at things with his son who ended up at Boston College and hear the parent see the parents taking pictures with their kid there and hear the parents talking about, well, you should have seen Teddy in the state championship game and yada yada yada, and roll his eyes and say, you know, to the parents he might have been with who were in the know, like, hey, my guy over here has already been deconstructed. I tell him every day he stinks and he can't block anybody and all of that stuff. You know, it's kind of talking about this kid's in for a rude awakening after they pump his tires to get him here when he rolls in the first day and they tell him about how good he isn't. It kind of reminded me of a military thing where they pump you up to get you to Paris Island, and then when you show up at Paris Island and step off that bus, oh, my God, are you in for a rude awakening of how they treat you? I'm just curious about that whole process and kind of the conflict there where you're telling the kid he's the greatest thing in the world, and then he shows up the first day of practice where you, the message might be slightly different.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Now, hopefully you handle the better the school, Ohio State, Alabama, you know, the programs like that, they don't have a big problem with that, but most of the other schools do simply because you're a seller, you know, as a recruiter, you're selling your program, selling yourself. But, you know, Joe Paterno always had the famous statement that, you know, I spend 6 months talking, tell them how good they are. And the first month they're here, I'm continually telling them how they're not very good, you know. Coaches, sons, obviously, they understand that part of it, too. But that's a big part of it. It really is because, you know, you to get players to come to your program, you have to have something to sell to them. Not real difficult to do it at Clemson and Alabama now, for instance. But most of the other programs, it is. And you know, a lot of people, and I can tell you as a grandfather, you kind of see your grandkids maybe being a little bit better than they are. You know, I think that's natural. But you're also smart enough to know that, hey, you know, that are they good enough to do some things that some of these college guys could do? Probably not.
How much – I mean, I would say – even while you were coaching, but especially now, and I'm sure you talk to friends about it with millennials, I would imagine there's a percentage of these kids that come out of the first three practices and say, holy hell, this ain't for me, the way they're talking. I'm imagining these position coaches who deal with the kids the most are also amateur psychologists.
You know, Paul, one of the first things we did, and I think most programs did, maybe still do, you tell a player and you tell his parents when they get there for preseason practice, listen, your son in all likelihood is going to be calling and saying, hey, I want to come up. Don't let him, you know, don't say the coach is on me all the time. I'm not good enough. I'm not all this. We recruited him because we believe he can be here. And some of the very best players I coached, quite honestly, the first couple of weeks they was there, the head coach would look at you and say, what in the world we recruit this guy for? But that is because they want to leave. They get homesick. They want to leave. You know, I was like that. I only went 15 miles away to a junior college, and I was so homesick. But you do tell them that, and that's another reason why when you bring players in, nobody on campus yet. When you bring players in, you room them. Everybody has a roommate. You room them with someone who lives, let's say, at Tennessee in Knoxville or Nashville, where they can go see their family. You tell them, take them to their home. Let them be part of this. You don't put two players from Alabama or two players, one from Texas and one from California, in the same room, because what happens, and it's happened to me, you wake up one morning and they're not there. And now they quit the team, and now how do you handle quitting the team, you know? I mean, there's a lot of...
Doug, as we look ahead for the SEC season, let's begin by previewing each week a team from the West and the East. And let's just start with Alabama at the top. We'll go in alphabetical order of each division. Alabama, we know who they return. They're returning Tua Tagovailoa. They've got Najee Harris in the backfield. They've got Jerry Jeudy at wide receiver. Their defense is stacked with Davis and Moses and others. Waddle is a very capable punt returner. With all that being said, how much of the competitive juices are flowing in Nick Saban thinking about Clemson this offseason?
You know, the other night, just by chance, I was watching, kind of flicking through. It was about, I think, 1 in the morning. I was flipping through and went to the SEC Network, and they had the spring game for Alabama on, and they just happened to be interviewing Coach Saban out there. And he was complaining about drop passes by Jerry Jeudy, who I don't remember him dropping any, but maybe he did in spring. But the thing that Alabama has now, their program, and he said this is one of the things I appreciate about him. He was asked a question about assistant coaches, and he said, well, I'm not concerned about my assistant coaches. Yes, we've replaced a bunch, but these guys are all good coaches. They all know what their responsibilities are. And that's when he threw in, I'm more concerned about us dropping balls out here in spring practice. But the thing at Alabama is they don't have a weakness, and their players are expected to play better than they are, and they are really, really good anyway. His mantra this year has been, we weren't prepared for Clemson. Clemson outplayed us, and we got a little soft. Now, I don't know, they were undefeated. I don't know how, but that's the way he looks at things on that. So they don't have any weakness. They got a quarterback that's one, if not the best in the game, one of the best. They got guys that can run. They got great depth. And they've been able to fight through injuries in the past. But, you know, at some point, one of the coaches he brings in, you would think, is not going to quite be quite as good a play caller as he thought he was, or not going to quite make the right decision, or they're going to get a group of guys hurt at one position. But having said that, they've had that happen and still have continued to win. They have the best of the both worlds from the standpoint of their players know they're good, and they know they're expected to play even better than how good they are. And normally they do. They don't lose many ball games. They get beat. Clemson beat them. I know Coach Saban probably thinks, and maybe right, that Alabama lost it. But quite frankly, the two games that Clemson's won against Alabama the last couple of years, 3 years, is Clemson's been better. They played better.
At Florida, Dan Mullen, throughout his career, has been known for developing quarterbacks. He's got one in Felipe Franks, who did a nice job in development with Mullen last year as the season progressed. What will the first game right out of the gate for Florida tell you, not just about Franks, but the entire team? August 24th, a week prior to week one across college football, Florida will play Miami.
Well, let's go back last year. I thought Dan Mullen did the best job of coaching in this conference, maybe too good a job from the standpoint he went 10-3. He beat LSU. You know, the games that were kind of interesting, he lost to Kentucky and Missouri. Those were two of his three losses. But he beat LSU, Mississippi State, Florida State, and Michigan in the bowl game. All four really good teams on that. He's still building that program. He was a great hire. I think anybody that got him, and he was in high, high, high demand. He is a proven quarterback coach, and he is a proven what he did at Mississippi State was just a super, super job. They, you know, that's not an easy place to win at. But you look at his schedule this year. He's got LSU and Georgia and Florida State and Miami and Auburn. So he is a extremely difficult schedule. I don't think they're at a competitive with Georgia yet. That doesn't mean they can't win some of those games. Georgia beat them pretty easily last year. But they got but that's a program that is building. Listen, everybody in the East fully understands that Florida is going to be really good pretty darn quick. The hope is that Tennessee can get back to that because they have the ability to get back there. Georgia has the ability to get back there. The rest of the East really doesn't have the ability, at least in my opinion, to play at that high championship level through really no fault of their own, but they're just not the type of programs that can build a competitive year in and year out championship level team simply because of the toughness of this league.
What do you have coming up this weekend?
You know, Sunday I'm going to try to do something. I'm going to tell a bunch of stories on Big Orange Sunday. I mentioned last week Charles Davis was on, and we were talking about Ken Donahue and him having the nickname of Crowbar. And I mentioned going into break, I was going to talk about it. Didn't get around to it, and I had a bunch of people asking me about it. So I'm gonna talk about where Ken Donahue's nickname came from. I'm going to talk about some guys I coached with at Tennessee, Frank Emmanuel being one who was a great coach, but Bobby Jackson, their characters and how much the football part of it is one thing, but how much goes on behind the scenes and really a lot of pranks and gags and things like that that some coaches don't appreciate. Frank Emmanuel, I'll tell the story about him, and he set the world record for whistle throwing off a lanyard, and I'll talk about that Sunday. Threw it in the upper deck from the 50-yard line at Neyland Stadium.
What?
That's impressive.
Was it weighted?
No. He and the head football coach got in a little disagreement, and he was told to get rid of his whistle, so he did. I was surprised knowing Frank he didn't put it somewhere else. But we'll talk about that Sunday.
You can catch Doug Saturday morning, 9 to 11, Forklift System Sports Saturday, every Saturday here on The Zone. And then, of course, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee Athletics, Big Orange Sunday, or Urge, if Tennessee has a problem with it, right, at 8 a.m. every Sunday morning.
Yeah, I don't know how you spell Urge, but I've heard a lot of people pronounce it Big Orange Sunday.
Yeah, that would have been the challenge, is the spelling.
Yeah, it would.
Full out right. Phonetics.
Spelling is a challenge for me anyway. Doug, thank you.
You bet. See you next week.